When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Daily Podcast is proud to be in partnership with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Whether your business needs cars, vans, or larger commercial vehicles, you can rent from the best lineup in the UK with Enterprise. And with flexible long-term rental, you can get vehicles for as long as you need them, from minutes to months. Whatever the mission, Enterprise's mobility experts can build a bespoke solution to suit your business needs. Visit enterprise.co.uk/business to find out more.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello, this is Sam Matterface and welcome to the Game Day Premier League podcast from TalkSport, where we look ahead to all the midweek games in the Premier League in the company of TalkSport's commentator Alex Crook, as the leaders go 6 points clear at the top of the table as they produce a Boxing Day bonanza of goals.
Let's focus on the 3 o'clock kickoffs though here on Game Day Live on TalkSport. We're going to take you around the grounds already.
Odegaard finds Saka inside the area, right hand side, tries to get a shot away, it's in! Bukayo Saka!
Manchester City 1, Leicester City 0. Kevin De Bruyne on 5 minutes. A flying start from the home team.
West Ham 2, Southampton 2. And, well, maybe Boxing Day is for goals. This is an absolutely terrific goal, by the way.
There's another goal. Get a load of this at the Etihad.
You know, if it gets to 4-4 or 5-4, it's going to be one of the best games we've ever seen on a Boxing Day. And it's definitely living up to this hype now.
An astonishing game of football. Manchester City 4, Leicester City 3.
74 minutes gone. Tottenham 3, Crystal Palace 0. Doesn't look like we're going to have some of the excitement at the other games, because this game is all wrapped up.
There's another one here at the London Stadium. I do not believe what we're witnessing on Game Day Live.
West Ham 2, Southampton 3. It's a lovely, lovely whipped in free kick from James Ward-Prowse, and Jan Bednarek for the third time this afternoon has headed Southampton in front.
Manchester City 6, Leicester City 3, and Raheem Sterling has just added the sixth goal for the home side.
And here's Odegaard looking for Pepe inside the box, puts it across to the far post, and Smith Rowe makes it 5. The top scorer for Arsenal.
It is still Lukaku, and Lukaku has been caught by Konsa, and it's a penalty.
Jorginho skips and scores. No mistake once again from him. The points are safe for Chelsea. Aston Villa 1, Chelsea 3.
Brighton 2, Brentford 0. Anything Leandro Trossard can do, Neil Mopay can match it as well.
The two cities steal the show, but it's a quick turnaround for both, and it doesn't get any easier for Leicester City, who have to take on Liverpool just 52 hours after the end of their 9-goal thriller at the Etihad. Palace and Norwich look for respite after being thrashed by the North London pair of Tottenham and Arsenal. Fresh from the first win in 7, Saints look to end Conte's unbeaten run, and West Ham look to bounce back at Watford. Arteta turns his Gunners on Wolves. Oh, no, that's gone. And there's action on Wednesday and Thursday night too. The ultimate preview to all the festive action from TalkSport. It's the Game Day Podcast.
This is Game Day.
Aye, aye, Crookie, you're all right? Trevor hasn't turned up, so it's just me and you this morning. Obviously, you had a very good Christmas. I'd love to know what his excuse is.
Well, it's not just me and you. It's me, you, and my little Matterface elf.
Okay.
We haven't been able to see each other too much in person over Christmas, so I've got this little guy just to remind me of your little face. And actually, producer Lucy says not only are you two similar in stature, but he does have your face as well. Look, there he is. He's even got a slightly big nose.
Yeah, he's got my fake nose. Brilliant. Fantastic. Obviously, I should put this out there, first of all. I've tested positive, so I'm isolating at the moment. I won't be commentating this week, which is really infuriating, because, like, you know, this is our busiest week of the season. We've got 10 games, and it means that I'm not going to do the three matches that I was supposed to do Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, should they go ahead, by the way. But I suppose the main thing is to shut the door and sort of ride it out. Luckily, every game this midweek that does go ahead is on TalkSport. I had the pleasure of listening to Game Day Live on Boxing Day because I was locked in, which was the first time, I think, in 2 decades that I hadn't gone to work on Boxing Day. But yeah, Trevor Sinclair was working, which is probably why he's not not here today because he had such a tough time watching Aston Villa against Chelsea at 5:30. Would have been a late night for him getting back about 9 o'clock.
Whereas I was at the Amex for what actually was a ridiculous kickoff time, really. So many empty seats. You texted me during the game and said, is it people staying away because they're scared about COVID? There might be a small element of that because there were a lot of empty seats, I think, as well in the game at the London Stadium between West Ham and Southampton.
Yeah, I noticed that, yeah.
Outside the capital, there's no public transport on Boxing Day. The Amex is a fantastic venue, but not the easiest place to get to without the use of the train. I know Brighton did their best. They laid on extra park and ride, actually threw open the director's car park to fans as well, but it definitely impacted attendances. And it's a shame because it was a really good performance from Brighton with two fantastic goals at the end of the first half.
Yeah, we should touch on the Boxing Day fixtures before we get into the preview for the rest of the week, because the pick of the bunch clearly was at the Etihad Stadium. Manchester City's 6-3 win over Leicester saw eight different scorers. Only Spurs 4, Arsenal 5 in November 2004 has seen more different scorers in a single game. It was also the first time this season that Arsenal and Tottenham had won on the same round of Premier League fixtures. And what were your highlights from the weekend? I thought it was great to see Lukaku back and contributing like Lukaku can. Granted, he's just recovering from COVID and can only play 45 minutes, but the way he out-muscled and out-positioned Konsa to win the penalty for the third and the movement for the header, absolutely exquisite.
Yeah, there were some great forward displays, actually. I thought Harry Kane probably produced his best performance of the season. Mm. Lukaku, as you say, great to see that raw strength that won him the penalty for what proved to be the decisive goal. Armando Broja doing similar for Southampton. And Neil Mopay, it was inevitable that he would score against his old club. He doesn't score from 6 yards, but he can half hit one from 20.
He can indeed. We should talk about that thrashing by Manchester City. I thought they were absolutely exquisite in the game. Some of the goals were brilliant, especially in the first half. Second half, they switched off a little bit and allowed Leicester back into the game. Very different game after half-time. We'll get to that when we're talking about Leicester in just a few moments. Arsenal won't be playing in midweek this week because Wolves have had a COVID outbreak. The game between Leeds and Aston Villa has also gone. Are you concerned slightly that the keep the show on the road policy will impact on the fairness and integrity of the league? Because Leeds or Aston Villa, or Leeds and or Aston Villa, may well benefit from playing this fixture with newer signings later in the year.
Yeah, and actually it's been mentioned to me by a couple of clubs at the bottom that Burnley will be in a similar situation, having lost a few of their games, and they'll be able to play those rearranged fixtures now, possibly with new signings. And so that's assuming the Burnley owners will loosen the purse strings.
But they will have Maxwell Cornet back probably from injury, which is a major difference to not go through the Christmas period with a talisman missing like that.
Agreed. And actually, I think the integrity has already been questioned because the wording of the statements for the most recent postponements has certainly changed. They are now taking injuries into account. Yeah. Well, we were told that wouldn't be the case. And, you know, they obviously accepted the request they had from Wolves to call off this game on Tuesday, from Everton quite late in the piece at the weekend. But they rejected a request from Crystal Palace, which I think was the right decision, by the way, because you look at the team that Crystal Palace put out, one alteration from their previous Premier League lineup. So I agree with that decision, but injuries should not come into it.
A quick word on the Everton game in midweek, because they're due to play in midweek, aren't they, against Burnley, I think. And as a result of that, that must be in doubt, mustn't it? Because if they've had a game cancelled on Sunday, the idea of them playing on, I think it's Thursday or Wednesday or whenever it is unlikely, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when you look at the fact
7:30 Thursday.
Yeah, especially when you look at the fact the Leeds game has already been called off. So they're in the same situation that Everton were. So yeah, I think that one is in doubt. I did check in with Crystal Palace yesterday, somebody on the coaching staff, and said, look, because they've lost Zaha now to suspension, that's another absentee. Is your game going to go ahead? He said, at the moment, it will go ahead as planned. The caveat was these things can change. So I think it is a constantly evolving situation. I'm looking ahead already now, Sam, to the end of January, when there is scheduled to be an unofficial, if you like, winter break in the Premier League. I wonder now if that may be scrapped and we try and get some of these postponed games into that slot. It would seem logical, but then the Premier League don't often deal in logic.
Good job I didn't end up booking that trip away that I was expecting to do at the end of January. Although, listen, I've had 3 or 4 days off work this week now, and I've already had enough. I couldn't wait to get up this morning and start getting ready for the pod. I know that sounds really Christmas Grinchy, but I don't like not working.
It's a nightmare. And again, the 8 o'clock kickoff seemed attractive to me yesterday because it meant I didn't maybe have to check myself so much in terms of the Christmas Day festivities. But I got to about 1 o'clock and I just found myself pacing up and down the front room. I just wanted to go to a game.
Well, lucky enough, there was quite a bit of pace about the Game Day live show on Sunday with Adrian Durham. It was brilliant. There were so many goals. It was fantastic. Let's hope the midweek gives us the same sort of offering. We do expect to have 8 more festive treats under our tree. So let's start with Super Tuesday.
Game Day here, bringing you the very best of the action in the Premier League. It's always a thriller with Talk Sport.
Gallagher trying to make room for a shot. He's done it again. Conor Gallagher, superb footwork.
Goes it back, Pukki, deflected it in. Maybe that's the break that Norwich needed.
It's Ward-Prowse who curls it right footed. Oh, it's absolutely special. That is vintage James Ward-Prowse.
Whipped on by Kane, and Harry Kane has done it.
Alshar again with a break into the penalty area. Fires in the shot. Oh, what a goal from Ismaili Assar.
Now Bowen with the left-footed effort into the corner, and West Ham are level.
The ball's played by Madison into the area, and here's Vardy with an effort across the goalkeeper and in.
Out of harm's way as far as Salah. 3-0 to Liverpool. Unstoppable shot by Mo Salah.
Christmas is about family, and that includes you, the TalkSport family.
We do have all of the games this week live on TalkSport, the TalkSport app and TalkSport 2. Leicester against Liverpool is arguably the pick of the bunch. Ian Danter will be commentating on this one now for us. Liverpool scored 3 goals against Leicester last week without Salah and Mane. How many will they get against them this week, bearing in mind they conceded 6 against Manchester City on Boxing Day, Crook?
Yeah, that second half performance from Leicester, as you put it, the way that Manchester City switched off, which I know infuriated Pep Guardiola, probably gave the game a little bit of an unfair scoreline. I mean, Manchester City absolutely blew them away in the first 25 minutes. Again, I know Leicester have got defensive issues, but you look at Yannick Vestergaard. That was the Yannick Vestergaard that Southampton fans came to know and love, as opposed to one that performed so well for Denmark at the European Championships. He had an absolute nightmare at the back. So you do fear for Leicester. And as you say, they managed to find a way to lose to Liverpool's B team in the League Cup. I'm sure those scars are still raw. And Liverpool, again, have benefited from not playing at the weekend. They'll be fresh. They might have one or two of their absentees back. I think it could be another difficult afternoon for Brendan Rodgers, evening for Brendan Rodgers, I should say.
That Leicester defence consisted of Luke Thomas, who really struggled against Riyad Mahrez. It's okay, pal, because Mo Salah's coming next. Yannick Vestergaard, who, let's face it, was brought in as backup, really. Daniel Amati, who only ever seems to appear for games against Manchester City, and then we don't see him for a whole year. Mark Albrighton, who is not a right-back, and it's pretty evident. I mean, he played better at right-wing-back, and actually, he did okay in the game against Liverpool when he came off the bench earlier in the week. But you must ask the question, how fit exactly were Ndidi, Vardy and Castagne to be left on the bench?
Well, it's a strange one with Jamie Vardy, because we know he's at the veteran stage of his career, but people will tell you that he's probably in better shape now than he ever has been. But certainly this season, there has been a rotation when it comes to him, whether that is to protect him from the sort of muscular injuries that he has been known to pick up, or if it's just a way of trying to get game time for the likes of Patson Daka and Iheanacho. Only Brendan Rodgers will know. I guess the one positive, and it's maybe the one positive of their season so far, because it has been underwhelming for the Foxes, is the continued impressive form of James Maddison. He was certainly a crucial part of their revival. And he's being talked about now as a contender for the World Cup at the end of next year. I think he's still got a bit to do to convince Gareth Southgate, but certainly he is in tip-top condition right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, Liverpool had a bit of a rest because of the game against Leeds being postponed. And prior to that, some of the big hitters had missed out against Leicester in the Cup, so that could be a benefit to them. But Leicester only had 28% of the ball against Manchester City. They still had 14 shots. We're a different animal, as we mentioned, after half-time. They will cause Liverpool one or two issues, and when they do, they usually cause them via James Maddison, whose run of form, as you've already pointed out, has been terrific. And that Liverpool defence hasn't looked particularly stout over the course of the last few weeks.
No, I think there'll be goals in this game. I'm not predicting another 6-3. And we should mention, actually, certainly the 3 o'clock kickoffs on Boxing Day had the look of a 1970s Boxing Day list when, of course, players were known to...
Hold on, the cliche is 1963, Crook. The cliche is 1963. That's the highest score in Boxing Day. You've got to remember that because people always tweet it out on Boxing Day.
You know me, I don't talk in cliches. But I think there will be goals. I think it may well be the pick of the midweek fixtures, but I would still... on the side of Liverpool to win. I think what you also see at this time of the year when there's games every 2 days is that the teams with the deepest squads, the top teams, tend to come out on top, and I think that'll be the case again.
Got any advice for Brendan Rodgers about zonal marking, bearing in mind that they've now conceded 12 goals this season from set pieces? I mean, even with the issues they've had in defence, that's got to be better, hasn't it?
But that's not a new problem. I mean, our football editor, a big Leicester fan, anybody who follows him on Twitter would know that. He's been screaming about their vulnerability from set pieces at least since the start of last season. I mean, that is the old cliche, the sign of madness if you make the same mistake time and time again. Clearly, nobody has relayed that one to Brendan Rodgers and his Leicester coaching team. You do wonder who is working with that defence. I know they've got Kolo Touré on the staff, so one would assume it would be him. I wonder if they need to join the growing list of Premier League clubs who have a specific set-piece coach, because certainly it's a problem.
AFCON players don't have to meet up now till after the weekend. I suppose that's good news for both these two sides, isn't it?
Yeah. And particularly Liverpool with the forward players. That is going to be intriguing in January, how they're going to cope with the loss of Sadio Mane and Mo Salah. But they've known all along about the African Cup of Nations, and actually I was quite encouraged by the comments of Patrick Vieira in midweek saying that this tournament needs to be treated with the same respect as a European Championship, because it does mean as much in Africa. If you sign an African player, there's no point in moaning about it. Just get on with it and go and let them try and represent their country and try and win what is the biggest prize in African football outside the World Cup.
It's not a secret, is it, that the African Cup of Nations takes place every 2 years in January and early February? I mean, that's the way it's always been. Do you know what? I've covered quite a few for ITV4 over the course of the last few, going back a few years, but it was brilliant. It was great fun as well. I don't understand why, one, we don't show more of it, and two, we don't understand, well, we don't plan for it, which is a bit strange. But anyway, Southampton against Tottenham, Talk Sport 2 on Tuesday, 3 o'clock. A rare Saints win at West Ham on Boxing Day. But a glance at the data that Opta were pushing out, it was a bit of a smash and grab raid from the Saints, wasn't it? Rare for them not only to win, but to score 3 goals, especially seeing as Saints XG in this game, Crook, was 1.25. Ralph Hasenhüttl was describing the performance as brave. So I wonder whether or not he's suggesting that they were a little bit fortunate to come away with all 3 points.
Yeah, probably. And it was a classic Saints game in many ways. They took the lead heading into half time. They got pinned back. They took the lead again. They got pinned back. And we've seen it so many times, haven't we, under Ralph Hasenhüttl, the number of points they've tossed away from winning positions, and it looked like that might be happening again. So I think great testament to their character to find a way to win the game. Wonderful delivery from James Ward-Prowse for the winning free kick. And Jan Bednarek actually ending his own hoodoo, because I think I mentioned it to you before, he scored, I think, 4 previous Premier League goals for Southampton, all of them coming in 3-2 defeats, which must be some kind
they of won 3-2 this time. Amazing.
Exactly. So nice for him to be on the right side of history. And a significant win for Southampton. They were in no kind of form going into that game. They've got a nice buffer now between them and the bottom three, and I think it's a lot more optimistic heading into a new year. On the flip side, West Ham United's form has completely tailed off. I don't think we're really talking about them in the conversation when it comes to Champions League anymore. Unless they can find a way to win and get back on winning ways quickly, they might not even be part of the conversation for the top six, because you look at the way that Tottenham and Arsenal are performing at the moment. They're the outsiders for European football next season.
Let's not get too excited. We'll talk about West Ham in just a second. They play Watford. Saints were without a win in 6. They never seem to take anything from West Ham, but they come up against a different animal on Tuesday night against Tottenham Hotspur. Tottenham certainly on the up, where West Ham have been a side that have been stumbling recently. And we mentioned on Thursday's pod, and you've already said about his display on Sunday, Harry Kane and his statistics were suggesting an uptick in form, and so it has proved. He ran the show down at St Mary's last season when he created 4 goals for Heung-Min Son. I mean, is it likely he will have a big contribution this Tuesday afternoon?
Yeah, I think so. I think he looked fitter. He looked sharper. He looked more focused than he has done at any point in this season so far. I do think there's been a hangover, maybe from both being the losing captain in a European Championship final, but also, and probably more pertinently, the transfer saga involving him and Manchester City. But six games now Antonio Conte has had in the Premier League, 4 wins, 2 draws. Yeah. They do look a different animal. They look like they're more cohesive as a unit. They're certainly more defensively resolute, and as a result of that defensive solidity, they look a bit more confident going forward now. I thought Lucas Moura was exceptional as well. The partnership between Son and Harry Kane was bubbling nicely. So this is a difficult game for Southampton. I think what it has given us now is a really intriguing battle for fourth place. When you look at the former Tottenham and Arsenal, we're recording this podcast before Manchester United take the field against Newcastle. I've just got a suspicion that they too might have benefited from the COVID outbreak in terms of more game on the training ground. And we're going to see a different Manchester United at St James's Park as well. I really hope that me and my little elf friend haven't jinxed that game.
Yeah, well, we'll talk a little bit more about that later on as well. Don't worry, we've got a good Manchester United chat coming towards the end of the pod. Watford against West Ham, 3 o'clock, TalkSport app. Mikel Antonio's return off the bench, probably a big thing for David Moyes. More importantly, actually, he scored a goal, which he hadn't done for a while. He was unhappy about some of the refereeing decisions. He was unhappy about some of the sort of bad fortune which is going against him. But, I mean, some of the luck was of their own making. I mean, the defending for the Bednarek goal, the Dawson challenge on Broja. I mean, it was pretty silly, really. And they've had a problem with defenders too, because they've had such bad injuries. But it was interesting to hear from Mikel Antonio afterwards, who said actually he doesn't think that physically it's been a problem them playing so often this season because of the outbreak of European football that they've had to deal with. So they're playing Thursday nights and Sundays quite often. He said actually mentally it was more of a problem.
Yeah, and listen, they're not experienced when it comes to balancing playing domestic football with Europe as well. I still think it's an exciting second half of the season for West Ham. It's been a disappointing week, isn't it, with that League Cup exit and then compounded with another loss in the Premier League. But I do think when the Europa League comes around again, if they can get some of those absentees fit, then they will be contenders to go deep into that competition. But the squad depth is the issue, and defensively, without Cresswell, without Ogbonna, without Zuma, they do look a bit vulnerable. And I think that's going to be a problem all the time that those players are unavailable.
Watford haven't played since the 10th of December. They've lost 7 of their last 9 games under Claudio Ranieri. How has that switch worked out, do you think? Because it looks to have sort of backfired, really. They've won 2 games, one against Manchester United and one against Everton. Both those teams at the time were under severe pressure. They've lost every other match.
Yeah, it's no real surprise, because I remember when we recorded the first podcast after Ranieri was appointed, and we posed the question, was it dilly dong or dilly wrong? And I think all three of us, yourself, Darren Lewis, and I came down on the side of dilly wrong. Obviously, they had that fantastic win at home to Manchester United, but United were shambles that day. That was more about the final days of the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer reign than it was about Watford. Going forward, they've got players who can hurt you. Clearly, Ismaïla Sarr has been a big absentee for them, but defensively has been a problem. And we know from history that Claudio Ranieri perhaps isn't the master tactician when it comes to organising that back line. And I think West Ham certainly have the tools to hurt them going forward. Again, it will come down to if that trio of attackers for Watford can expose West Ham's own vulnerabilities at the back. Should be a good game.
For this exclusive live and free Boxing Day Premier League commentary for you. Odegaard finds Saka inside the area, right hand side, tries to get a shot away, hits in! Bukayo Saka gives Arsenal the lead! Graham Scott allowed play to continue with Tierney injured, and my, how Arsenal took advantage! Puts it across to the far post, and Smith Rowe makes it 5! It's another depressing afternoon for Canaries fans.
30 minutes into the game, we were fairly pleased. You know, in possession, I thought we were doing fairly well. We were getting good possession, you know, without threatening, but it was a solid start. Out of possession, I thought we were comfortable. But we know how strong Tottenham are on the counter-attack in particular, and we got caught with that, which is disappointing for us. But, you know, I still felt that we could still get something out of the game despite the setback of conceding those two early goals. But, of course, you know, when we go down to 10 men, then it was a really difficult afternoon after that.
No, absolutely. You know, because I felt, you know, in some of our combination play, you know, everything's happened so quickly. So we're in this process of trying to create some sort of style and identity. And I think our fans are seeing it. You know, we've now played Liverpool, Manchester City and Chelsea. You know, the three elite clubs in our league, and probably three of the massive, biggest elite clubs in Europe as well. So that's been very encouraging, the fact that we've stood toe-to-toe.
Interesting chat about Chelsea and Brighton to come, and a player who's caught the headlines that we're still not sure about in the Chelsea ranks, and Manchester United, what they've been doing in the absence of any games to actually play. That's coming before the end of the podcast. A quick word on Crystal Palace Norwich, which is a 3 o'clock kickoff in the TalkSport app. Palace well beaten again, this time at Tottenham, but without Patrick Vieira on the bench because of COVID. And they did try to have this game chalked off at the weekend and they couldn't get it done. And I think quite rightly so, because we've looked at the starting lineup. We think it's good enough to play a football match. I think most Palace fans would agree that that's maybe not their best team, but certainly it's not their worst team that they could put out either. It's not full of under-23s. One change, I think, from the previous game. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with them going forward. And I think we have to be a little bit stronger in terms of if we're going to keep the season going, we've got to have clear rules and definitions about whether or not games are going to get called off. And Palace, they're denied the opportunity to have their game chalked off. Arsenal played Norwich, were excellent on Boxing Day, Arsenal. They ripped them apart. Saka, Ødegaard, who's starting to show, and I hold my hands up here, I thought he was a peripheral figure and things were happening around him rather than through him. But he has produced brilliantly over the last few weeks. 3 goals and 3 assists in his last 6 games. They're in fourth place going into the weekend, but they have played 3 more games than Spurs. But I want to focus on Norwich, who are Crystal Palace's opponents. Booed off at half-time, bottom, COVID ravaged, although when I looked at the lineup again, I wasn't entirely sure ravaged was the right description. An Angus Gunn in goal, hadn't played since conceding 9 in a Southampton shirt in the Premier League, and returned to concede 5 on his Premier League debut for Norwich. That didn't go particularly well for them, did it?
14 goals conceded in 2 games. That's not too bad, is it, for Angus Gunn? If we're talking about games being called off because clubs can't field a Premier League calibre lineup, then Norwich would never play a game, to be honest, because
I can't believe you've gone there.
Well, they're dreadful, aren't they? You know, they've been dreadful since the first game of the season. They had a mini upturn the final game under Daniel Farke in the first few matches under Dean Smith, and they looked like they were more organised defensively. They don't have the quality of player going forward to score goals on a regular basis in the Premier League. In fact, if the boy Sargent scores more Premier League goals this season than you and me, Sam, I would be surprised. He has been an absolute howler of a signing. £8 million is a lot of money for a club like Norwich. He's just not Premier League quality. They're heading for the Championship. They've got no chance of turning this around. I think they'll be relegated by February.
Yeah, poor old Josh Sheldon, I think, was at fault for the third goal as well. He didn't track Tierney, didn't realise he was playing on the right-hand side of midfield. It's not his position. He didn't realise that Tierney had broken down that left-hand side. By the time he realised it was too late and Tierney had scored and put it in the corner, and it was all over. Let's get to Wednesday night, because there are some Wednesday winter warmers for you live on TalkSport and TalkSport 2.
Brighton 1, Brentford 0. This is a Boxing Day belter from Leandro Trossard. Long ball over the top from Enoch Mwepu. First time finish from Trossard, who spotted that Alvaro Fernandez, the Brentford goalkeeper, had come a long way off his line. He lifts it right-footed over the advancing stopper and into the bottom corner. A screamer from Leandro Trossard. Brighton 1, Brentford 0.
Now Jorginho.
Lukaku again makes the burst into the area. Hudson-Odoi delivers the crossing. Lukaku's header, brilliantly done. Fantastic goal by Romelu Lukaku. It's his first in the Premier League for over 3 months. And once again, it has come against Aston Villa. And that was superb centre-forward play. The movement and then the precise header into the far corner. And it's Aston Villa 1, Chelsea 2. And Jorginho will take his second penalty of the game, deep into added time, to seal 3 points here for Chelsea. Jorginho skips and scores. No mistake once again from him. The points are safe for Chelsea.
.30 on Wednesday, it's Chelsea against Brighton, and Chelsea back in the hunt, says the front page of the game from the Times this morning, their supplement. It's going to be difficult to track with all the games being moved and rescheduled in terms of who's in the title race, who's not in the title race, who's close, who's not. But keeping themselves in touch was really important for Chelsea this weekend. The sentiment in the front of the paper comes from the fact that Lukaku is back, which is key.
It felt like a statement win for Chelsea, particularly as they'd have seen earlier in the day what Manchester City did against Leicester City. And Liverpool have clearly been outperforming Thomas Tuchel's men in recent weeks. Chelsea have been ravaged by injury and by COVID, but they're getting their players back now. And Lukaku is clearly key to that because they've effectively been playing without a recognised striker in his absence. He actually looked a bit jaded for me in the games that he did play before his layoff. He looked much sharper yesterday, much fitter, much more powerful. So he is going to be a game-changing factor. I suppose the question with Lukaku will be, can he do it against their title rivals, or are we going to see that flat-track bully accusation that certainly he had at Manchester United? I think Graham Potter will have been disappointed to see him come back and come back so strongly. But Brighton are getting players back as well. It looked a much more balanced Brighton side against Brentford. They were very impressive in the first half, tailed off a bit in the second, and actually invited the bees back into the game, yeah. But they lacked a bit of punch to take advantage of that. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that the Chelsea will win the game. They should win the game, but Brighton have proved already this season by going up to Liverpool and coming back from 2-0 down that they won't be intimidated by anybody.
Defensively, they've got some issues there, haven't they, Brighton? I mean, Dan Byrne played well in the game against Brentford, despite the fact that there's no Duncan Duffy alongside him. He played with Adam Webster, didn't he? Both missed that game, so I suppose it's encouraging they kept a clean sheet, even if Robert Sanchez had to make one outstanding save. Whether they can keep Lukaku and co out is a different matter.
Duffy will be back. It was a suspension, wasn't it, for Duffy? So he'll be back.
Okay, because he was talking. When I saw the interview beforehand, and they asked him about Duffy, and he said, well, we've got a mixture of injuries, suspensions, and COVID, and Duffy falls into that category. And I was like, well, which one is it? There's all three there. Callum Hudson-Odoi came back into the team for Chelsea again. I'm not sure where he fits in when everyone's fit. 18 games this season, 2 assists, 3 goals. Two goals, 3 assists. He won the penalty, floated the cross in for Lukaku on Sunday, but missed 2 or 3 really good chances that could have been crucial to the game, because there are points in the match where if Chelsea had established a further lead, then the game's killed and finished. Actually, they didn't get their third goal until stoppage time. And as a result of that, there was a period where Aston Villa were threatening to try and get an equaliser in the game. So you need players in those moments to take chances. And it has been a problem for Chelsea that the other players, apart from Lukaku, when he hasn't been around, haven't taken chances. The only one who's really stepped up is Mason Mount, who's got a lot of goals recently. So I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. I'm still waiting to see Callum Hudson-Odoi, the player that Chelsea was so desperate to keep hold of that they rebuffed an £80 million deal from Bayern Munich. Where is that? I haven't seen that yet. Maybe it's still to come, but I haven't seen it yet.
And I think it's interesting you mentioned there that the lack of goals coming from midfield, Mason Mount aside, that's probably what sets Liverpool and Manchester City apart from Chelsea at this moment in time, the ability to get goals from all over the pitch. But I agree with you on Callum Hudson-Odoi. I know he's on a very healthy contract at Chelsea as well. They do seem to have a policy of maybe paying their young players a little bit over the odds. And at the moment, for me, he's not that player you can rely on to change a game when it's tight and really come up with a big match-winning moment.
Jorginho reliable as ever from the penalty spot. That seems to be Chelsea's best route to goal. He was the top Premier League goalscorer last season. He's got 6 penalties in the Premier League alone this campaign. Chelsea have had more penalties than anyone else in the league this season. Maybe that's the way that they're going to do their business. Now, listen, this is a great statistic, this. Pay attention, because this is good for you. Because are you doing Chelsea-Brighton? Are you doing that game? No?
Not as far as I know at the moment. I'm at Crystal Palace.
Hey, there's going to be a few more games available, I'm afraid, over the course of this week.
I'm available for selection.
Brighton have only ever beaten Chelsea once in their history, right? That was in the FA Cup in 1933.
Crikey.
No, I wasn't there, funnily enough. They have never even scored at Stamford Bridge. Never even scored at Stamford Bridge. True facts. There you go. That one.
How many times they have played them, though? Because we know that Brighton haven't been in the top division very often.
That's 7 or 8, Stamford Bridge. It's still quite a lot, really, isn't it, without scoring? It's quite a drought. Anyway, what, you're not impressed with that statistic?
Semi. You've had better.
I'm ill. Leave me alone. 8:15, Brentford against Manchester City is on Wednesday night as well. Manchester City conceded as many goals in 10 minutes against Leicester as they had in their previous 8 league games. But Brentford should be easier to keep out, mainly because they seem to take a while to get cooking. As you mentioned, they only really got going towards the end of that game against Brighton. And when they do get going, they're very direct. Oof.
They're the new Wimbledon, aren't they?
They don't go over the top.
Well... You don't see too many long throw specialists in the Premier League, do you, in the modern era? Brentford have one in Mads Beck Sorensen. And he does cause havoc, actually. One of those opportunities they did create came for a long throw that Sanchez flapped at. In the end, Cucurella made a quite incredible goal line clearance, assisted by the fact I think he's got a massive afro. If he had a crew cut, I'm not sure he would have been able to get back and win that header off the line. But they are direct. They're a handful to play against, but they do lack a little bit of subtlety. I think they're going to be grateful for getting their points on the board early in the season. I think it could be a long winter for Brentford.
City will probably get a few goals, won't they? They have scored 28 goals in their last 8 league games and 17 in the last 3. That's pretty damn impressive. And on the subject of Cucurella's haircut, obviously, for him to get back quicker, a shorter haircut would help, wouldn't it, to be streamlined?
Yeah, but I think he headed it away with the afro. Right.
Foden and Grealish on the bench again for Manchester City at the weekend. Obviously, it doesn't really cause them that much of a problem, because, as you said, because their squad is so deep, it means that they've got the ability to rotate and be selective with their choices. They can afford to discipline players, and Guardiola can rule with an iron fist.
Yes, he can. And as we mentioned on the podcast heading into this round of games, I think Jack Grealish has really let himself down there with his latest off-field antics. And I think he might have to sit and sulk on the bench for a little while longer, because the players that have come into the team have really stepped up. Raheem Sterling, in particular, I think has had a mixed 2021 when it comes to his club form, but he does seem to have found the way to goal again, and he's actually producing consistently now some very impressive form. So I think it's difficult in particular to leave him out of the team. You have to find a way for Bernardo Silva to play more often than not. Kevin De Bruyne now looks back to full fitness, and then you look at Rodri and Gundogan, very important as well. So it is hard for the likes of Gabriel Jesus, who was benched, and the two on the naughty list, Foden and Grealish, to force their way back into the 11.
As far as Brentford are concerned, is there any lingering doubts about their participation in the Premier League next season for you?
I don't think so, just based on the fact that they, as a lot of newly promoted sides tend to do, came up full of momentum, full of adrenaline, and got some points on the board early.
They have spells, don't they?
Yeah, they're 9 points clear of the relegation places. I know Burnley have 2 games on hand against the Watford, have got a game in hand as well, but actually Newcastle and Norwich don't. You can't see either of them making up a 10-point deficit. So I think they'll be okay, but I think they'll finish a lot closer to the dotted line than maybe we would have expected 6 or 7 weeks ago.
Okay, let's move on to Manchester United and Everton, and Newcastle and Burnley are all taking part in Thursday's game.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the TalkSport Daily is brought to you by Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Planning to hire or share a car or van? Enterprise is there every step of the way. Whenever and wherever you need a vehicle and whatever it's for, Enterprise can help. With over 450 locations across the UK, they're just around the corner. Whether you need a weekend rental, a holiday hire, a replacement car, or you're planning a business trip, home or away, Enterprise are there to help. To find out more and book, visit enterprise.co.uk.
7:30, it's Everton against Newcastle. I suppose the big question about Thursday's game between these two, and it is Everton-Newcastle, I think I said Burnley before, is will this game go ahead? Because bearing in mind, Rafa said he had 9 outfield players and about 17 goalkeepers on Sunday. That is an issue, isn't it? You know, whether or not this game takes place. And my big question about the postponements is, do the delays help Newcastle? Like they have done other teams. Ralph Hasenhüttl was saying that it helped Southampton, actually, the little break, so they could reset, work on the training ground. Or does it hinder them? Because it means that they're going to have such a rush of games all in quick succession. I mean, the other facet is not only that Eddie Howe has been able to work with the current players that he's got on the training ground, it means that by the time that they play some of these games, they would have been able to utilise quite a lot of money, if they want to bring in more players. So when it comes to the back end of the season, if the back end of the season is backloaded, then I don't think Newcastle will be too upset about that.
I think that's the key, because they are going to try and spend some money in January. Kieran Trippier certainly is very high on that shopping list. I think Sven Botman as well from Lille is a distinct possibility to come in and strengthen that back line. I know Newcastle were one of the clubs advocating for a possible circuit breaker
at the recent
Premier League meeting. So you can probably understand why that is the case. But it's an interesting question when it comes to Everton, because I think I'm right in saying that that game was called off on Christmas Eve, wasn't it? On Friday.
Yeah.
It's 7 days in isolation now. So presumably they could have quite a few of those players back testing negatively by Thursday, just because of the fact they are due to play on Thursday.
Yeah, but Rafa has already pointed out you can't rush players back who've had COVID, because then it is, you know, if you're making them play, it is the league's responsibility, their health and safety. And he's sort of made that pretty clear and quite stark. He dropped in a few little grenades there, Rafa Benitez, when he was in his press conferences.
I'm not sure the Premier League are going to buy that, to be honest.
Well, maybe they won't, but he wasn't shying about coming forward. I think he mentioned a few emotive terms, I thought, during the press conference, to sort of point out that if a player had a problem and they'd just been rushed back by COVID and you made us play them, then, you know, it's not our fault.
Well, he's the master politician, isn't he, Rafa Benitez? He always has been, so it doesn't surprise me that he's going down that route. I think the league will be keen to get this game to go ahead as scheduled.
Well, we won't know what Everton to expect, because we don't know who's had COVID and we don't know how many of them will be back. But if they did go into isolation on Friday, then they won't be out till Friday again, I wouldn't have thought. I don't know. But either way, it is a bit of an issue for Everton going into the game against Newcastle. 8:15, it is Manchester United against Burnley. Burnley haven't played since the 12th of December. What sort of condition will they be in when they come back? I mean, it's an 18-day break without a match, and we saw with Brighton, actually, there was a bit of ring rustiness about them at the weekend. How's it going to affect Burnley? That's a long time.
Well, it can go either way, can't it? Because you say that Brighton were ring rusty. I didn't think they were in the first half. Yes, they did tire a bit in the second, but Tottenham certainly haven't looked ring rusty since their break. It's almost like they've taken advantage of more time on the training ground with Antonio Conte. Just on the subject of Manchester United and fixture congestion, and I do think there is a little element of some clubs using this situation to their advantage to almost try and give themselves an unofficial winter break. Disappointed by Ralf Rangnick's comments over the League Cup. You know, this guy has only just got into the country. He's been here 5 minutes and he's already putting his two penneth in about the fixture schedule and about the number of competitions that we play in English football. Stick to your own lane, pal. Don't interfere in what is a historic competition in its own right.
But, and without wanting to accede to his demands and playing devil's advocate, you have got to find a solution to this ridiculous situation of having too many fixtures in the calendar. There is too many fixtures, especially in our calendar, because we do have more competitions than everybody else. And that is a massive issue for our players. And, you know, you look at the expansion of the UEFA competitions, the number of games that there have been and will continue to be over the next few years. You look at the number of international games and, more importantly, the more competitive international games because the Nations League has come in recently. You know, it is, and the idea of a World Cup every 2 years, absolutely balmy. You're not getting a break. So either we need more footballers and more high-quality footballers and bigger squads and therefore bigger wage bills for football clubs, which I'm not sure they're particularly happy about taking on, or we do need to restructure the calendar. But I think the whole of the football world needs to come together and restructure the calendar because the calendar itself doesn't work. We've already mentioned about the Africa Cup of Nations and the fact that it takes place at a time which actually causes European clubs a bit of a headache. Well, okay, well, where can you fit it? Should there be an international window where you could have a World Cup or international tournaments all at the same time every year? But obviously, you know, the World Cup, the European Championships, the Africa Cup of Nations would take their turn in the queue. I think they do need to sit down and work it out properly because at the moment, the calendar is an utter, utter mess.
Oh, you can tell it's Christmas when Sam Matterface is looking at a perfect world. The problem with your cunning plan is the amount of self-interest that currently happens in football.
I mean, it's Christmas time, come on.
But, you know, the Premier League are only out for themselves. The EFL were never going to agree to one-legged semi-finals in the Carabao Cup because they would have lost too much money from television revenue and the clubs from gate receipts as well. UEFA are pushing their own agenda. FIFA are pushing their own agenda. So the chances of all those parties coming together, even at this festive feel-good time, I would suggest is very slim.
Manchester United against Burnley then. I wanted to talk about Anthony Martial. He's told Ralf Rangnick to his face, I want to leave. I've been here 7 years now and I need something different. And Rangnick says he's listened sympathetically, but ultimately nobody's bid for you. So you can't really go anywhere unless someone comes in for you. The club need to replace him if anyone did come in because they're fighting on three fronts, he pointed out. And this is a guy that, let's be honest, has scored one goal this season. He scored four this calendar year and just eight since the start of last season.
He wouldn't be the most difficult player to replace, would he? Let's be honest. I mean, I remember that frantic deadline day when Martial was signed and it was seen as this massive fee for a teenager, all kinds of add-ons, including winning the Ballon d'Or. I think it would be very interesting to see exactly how much Manchester United have ended up paying for Anthony Martial, because I would imagine that he's missed most of the targets when it comes to the additional payments. He simply hasn't proved himself to be good enough. As you say, 7 years is long enough to do that. But the reason nobody's come in for him is because one of the more bizarre decisions that was made under the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer regime 2 years ago was to give an underperforming Martial a hefty new contract on wages of around £240,000 a week. Okay. We know he wants to go to Sevilla. They're not going to get anywhere near that. So the only way that Manchester United would sanction a deal, I think, would be to send him out on loan and pay a percentage of his wages. They're probably not keen on that idea because, as we've seen in these COVID hit times, you do need as many first team players in and around the squad as possible, even if they're as average as Anthony Martial.
But if they're going to pay half his wages, they might as well pay all of his wages and have him actually available for a COVID outbreak or an injury crisis, mightn't they? I mean, that's the situation. So as much as he wants to leave, you know, it's got to be on Manchester United's terms. And that's something that Ralf Rangnick has pointed out. He seems to rule with quite an iron fist, and I kind of quite like it, really. Rangnick's start obviously has been disrupted, but he's determined to make the most of it. He said this week, obviously, we couldn't train, so I spoke with most of the players who were either in isolation or positively tested. I spoke with 16 or 17 players individually over the phone to hear how they were and how they were feeling. The players were then issued with individually tailored fitness programs, which they all took seriously. Good. Regular video calls were made between the fitness coaches and the players to help them with their exercises. So he's obviously been working quite hard behind the scenes to try and get them prepared for the matches that are to come, and there'd be quite a lot of them.
That doesn't surprise you. I think the one thing that we knew about Ralf Rangnick when he came in was his attention to detail, the demands that he puts on players physically in training and during matches. So as I say, I think they will have benefited from the break, and we should see a stronger, more determined looking Manchester United, because as much as they've tightened up defensively in the couple of league games that he's had, they weren't impressive performances. So I think there's still a lot of improvement to be done. It's interesting you mentioned that he's been giving the players individual training plans away from the training ground. They're not the only club that have done that. I spoke to Ryan Fraser for Talksport last week, and Eddie Howe made the decision also to close their training ground just to try and protect the players. And they were also given training sessions at home. So maybe this is something that we'll see managers do more in the Premier League, again, to try and protect the integrity of the competition and keep the show running.
Yep. Okay. My video analysis will continue this week as well. I'll just be sitting and watching. We'll have a podcast for you on Friday morning when you wake up to look back on all the midweek action and to look ahead to what should be quite an interesting weekend of Premier League action as well. We've got it all covered on TalkSport, TalkSport 2 and the TalkSport app. All the games are available on TalkSport this midweek, so make sure you are with us for that. That is it from Crook and I and from Trevor Sinclair. Thanks, Trevor. Yeah, have a good day. Thank you for all your support over the course of the year. Enjoy your extra slice of football this week. Stay safe, please, as well. Are you waving goodbye to me with an elf?
I am, mate, just to try and raise your morale. Look,
yeah, my morale's fine.
Me and little Sam are saying a Christmas farewell.
Okay. Goodbye. We'll be back on New Year's Eve with another Game Day pod from TalkSport.
The TalkSport Daily Podcast is proud to be in partnership with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Whatever your mission, home or away, don't delay. Enterprise has the vehicle for the job. Rent from the best lineup in the UK. With over 450 branches, Enterprise has what your business needs. From compact three-door cars to spacious SUVs and people carriers to vans, they offer a large range of reliable vehicles perfect for the job. To find out more and book, visit enterprise.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.